Welcome to The Climate Fix. My name is Asim. On this show, we shine a spotlight on nonprofits, academics, corporations, startups, anyone working on a solution to the climate problem.
We hear a lot that data is the new oil, and perhaps for the better that data is going to replace oil. of course, it's also going to create a bit of a carbon footprint as well. But it is becoming very important for decision making and finding solutions. But we also are very conscious that it's an enabler. Data is not everything. And that we also need to be not all about technology. So it's also about, at the end of the day, people, changing habits and having things to happen in the design of how we do things. But having data is going to help that.
That was Mathieu Carlier, CEO and founder of Ever Impact. There are many ways to slice the greenhouse gas pie. We often look at it sector by sector, such as transport and agriculture. But if you look at it geographically, it turns out that cities are responsible for 70% of global greenhouse gas emissions. And cities have leaders who can drive change. Ever Impact makes it easier for cities and companies to measure greenhouse gas emissions, identify opportunities to reduce those emissions, and finance needed investments. This is the second podcast in a series about information, about how just information all by itself, presented in the right way, can be a powerful climate solution. Mathieu has 2 decades of experience in international development. He worked for and on behalf of organizations like the UN, EU, USAID, Gates Foundation, and over 50 governments. His experience in deploying complex data systems for presidential and legislative elections in war zone or post-conflict countries provided him with a unique vision of the most pressing global development challenges faced by many countries and how to solve them with innovative technologies. Let's dive in. So hi, Mathieu. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Asim. Pleasure to be here.
What is the climate problem that you're solving?
Right. So at the high level, we are addressing the data gap in climate because there is a big problem with data. There is not enough data, actually. So currently, if you look at how a business or a city wants to get to its carbon footprint, they only usually rely on estimated data, and usually it's self-reported. We even hear, actually, some of our clients saying that they get different providers, they use the same method, that they actually sometimes get to a different result. So all of this is a bit of an issue because this is a time-consuming process. It's still spreadsheet-based. It's still a new space, getting data for climate, for coming up with a carbon footprint. It's a new thing. So there is a lot of unreliable estimates from many stakeholders from many different places. You don't always know the exact source of the carbon emissions. So that means you're missing out on reduction opportunities. You're not specific enough. You're not targeting enough. You're not clear always on which are the low carbon solutions you should focus on, because you also have a lot of solutions and a lot of efforts to produce. And this is not always easy to know which to focus on. And last but not least is that you're not attracting in the way the way things are done in businesses and cities, that they're not attracting financing for their carbon reduction efforts. And this is a big problem because there's a lot of investments to be made into shifting to a low carbon economy. And they are missing out on a lot of financing, actually.
So I remember looking at your website, and you had a really fascinating statistic there, which is that I think it was 70% of all carbon emissions are from cities. And that's an area that you focus on. And I love that because we're used to seeing the carbon pie looked at from various different angles, like the energy sector is this and the agriculture sector is this. But looking at it from a city perspective is really interesting. And that's what you focus on, right?
Yes, that's correct. We do see that about 70% of emissions come from cities, and it's a big trend, right? If we want to come up with solutions, we're going to have to focus on the city as a territory. We do take a specific angle, is to start focusing on what we call scope one emissions, which are basically direct emissions, because there is very little data about this.
Scope one is the emissions, just for the audience, it's the emissions that from actual burning of things like fossil, releasing of carbon. So for instance, the emissions that come out of a gasoline car is scope one. Yep.
Exactly. Yeah. So think of the your car that is emitting CO2, that could be a building that is using the heating system, radiators and so on. So this is releasing greenhouse gases. Think of a polluting factory in the vicinity of a city and so on. So these are what we call scope one, or direct emissions, absolutely, and which are a big chunk of the emissions. And I think another statistic that can be interesting, that I use the podcast here, because I think it's a good way to give a bit of message, is also to stress the climate problem is very big, because we have to reach a reduction of 24 billion tons of CO2 by 2030. So that's about a reduction of 65%. So you got to think of having 24 times the airlines on the ground like we had for coronavirus. This is massive. And that's why it's an urgent problem to solve. And I mentioned just a bit before financing, because if we want to find solutions to this problem, we're going to come up with the solutions to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, but we also got to put the resources. And we are talking about $10 trillion being invested to solve climate change. And that's basically 2% of our GDP, 1.5 to 2% of our GDP that goes into solving climate change until 2030. And that's to tell you that's a massive problem we have in front of us. And if we are not understanding this problem with data, we're going to have a difficult time to find the reductions and find the resources to finance the solutions.
I think that's really amazing the way you're looking at this from that perspective. It's not just here's the solution that we need. It almost feels like this is the ether with which a solution needs to be implemented. We need data. Data drives financing. It drives decision making. It drives all this other stuff. And it's not quite there yet, it sounds like. And yeah, as an engineer, I would also agree that without data, without measuring something, nothing ever seems to get fixed. So just to give me an understanding of what does it look like right now? Like, how are cities solving this problem right now? And what are ways that they're failing to achieve the successes because of a lack of data?
Yeah. So cities and businesses as well. Currently, what we see is that they've been using spreadsheets. Basically, they do what we call the greenhouse gas inventory. So they are basically, you know, counting emissions from either their business or their city. And they usually put this into a spreadsheet and use what we call emission factors, which are basically, for example, we count the number of vehicles and multiply this by an emission factor of we imagine how much this pollutes. And we've seen how this went with the Volkswagen case, for example.
Oh, yeah. The Volkswagen case where they cooked the numbers somehow that the Volkswagen cars were emitting less than they were. Yeah.
Yeah, right. And so same thing with the electricity consumption. Businesses and cities are coming up with those numbers based on their consumption of electricity. But all this is very good. It's a very good starting point. But there tends to be some... you know, there is a bit of a lack of trust in those numbers, especially from the perspective of investors, that there is a lot of money. As I told you, we are going to invest $10 trillion in the next 10 years, right? So, but to put this money into solutions, the finance world wants to see the impact. And how do we measure that impact? Is that we've got to produce some better numbers than what's out there. So now you start to see some companies, businesses and cities that start to have a bit of software to try to compile the data from the different systems they have, which is also great. And we support all this, of course, and we work with that. But we think that if we want to reach a certain scale, we're going to have to put a CO2 metric. We're going to have to put some measurements and not estimates. And this is really what we are trying to do, is to bring some measurements and to be able to track carbon emissions, and which will be better for reducing emissions and to attract financing.
So, yeah, I think people are often surprised to find out how secretly the world is run on a whole bunch of Excel spreadsheets. And I can also understand that from an Excel spreadsheet, it's hard to go to a bank or somebody with that $2 trillion funding and say, give us some money, prove it. Here's an Excel spreadsheet with a whole bunch of bespoke data sources and links together. So, yeah. So that's one angle. It sounds like you're providing that data in a clear, consistent format, which makes it easier for banks and financing, and I presume insurance as well, like everybody to kind of come in and see it. But when you talk about measurement, I think, are you talking about direct measurement with devices?
Exactly. So what we've done is that we have developed a software platform, but that automatically measures the carbon emissions to find reduction opportunities and generate revenues for businesses or cities to finance their reduction efforts. But how we do this is that we start with getting data from satellites dedicated to measure greenhouse gas emissions. So we started working on this actually with NASA, that launched the first satellite to monitor carbon emissions on cities. But what we realized from our experience, but also on launching this business, is that satellite imagery alone is not enough. The data, you get data every second week. There is some holes in the racket, if I can put it that way, you know. So you need to complement this with sensors, ground sensors, and in order to come up with more accurate data and measurements. And we also apply a bit of modeling as well on top to capture data from traffic, buildings, and other sources, which we are trying to, at the moment, enhance with artificial intelligence and machine learning to come up with more accurate data. And try to remove the uncertainty in the estimates.
And so it almost also sounds like you're going from a static data model, like an Excel sheet. Often when people do this kind of modeling stuff, they take like the emission factors, the average of the year, and that's what you use to calculate. And then you're moving to satellite data, which is almost every 2 weeks where you can get that data. So a little bit more real time. But what you're now is like actual real time information to the second about data. How does getting data that's more up to date and real time, how does that affect the decision making, or how does that affect things?
Well, so actually, or currently, if you do the traditional methods, you get data probably every year, every second year at best. Here we're talking about getting your data every hour. To start with, and we'll be able to go down at a more a better frequency, but for now it's already a lot to get to once every hour, and this is really bringing you so you save time because you don't have to do this whole exercise of compiling data in Excel spreadsheets. These are automated measurements, but these are more accurate and actually certified, so we get the data certified by third parties. So it's not only your internal cuisine, right? It's also something that has been reviewed by experts and approved by the climate by climate scientists, by the community as a whole. That makes you being able to report automatically to authorities and to investors and the finance world that is interested to help you reduce emissions. And also you access financing. But you also will be able to have a lot more information on your policies and your actions. So now you're not going to have to wait 1 year or 2 years, right, to know if this working actually. You're going to be able to check every hour or every day or every month what I'm doing, what I'm trying to achieve, is it working or not? And we see this with clients, is that it is a tool to first have a metric, but also to see what works, what doesn't. Identify more reductions as well, because when you estimate, you may actually, when you do it yourself, you may actually make it look good, right? So we might find actually more potential for reductions and try to also bring some capital to accelerate the transition to a low carbon economy.
So it sounds like it saves time, as you said, because it's automated.
Yeah.
It's certified, and I love that aspect of it. We spoke to Bruno from Enyon on the podcast as well, although now I'm scared. I don't know which one's going to go first, but one of these other podcasts, Vector Footprint from Enyon, and they spoke about they have a data platform for renewable sites where the better access to data, the better access to financing. And again, we spoke to Johnny Page from Sign Finance, one of the first podcasts of this series, and he spoke about there is this large body of money that's available, but how do you get that money effectively to the projects? And so I love how that's kind of another thing that is certified. So it makes it easier for someone to risk their money on something like this. And also it makes complete sense, the policy aspects of it. If you're getting data every hour, I could run weekly, monthly changes to, I don't know, the traffic system in a city to see if that reduces carbon. Is that the kind of things you're seeing happen?
Yeah, absolutely. We are getting into projects, into smart city projects, for example, or within the industry, where we're looking to connect to other sensors, other data points, and you start to understand at a much more granular level what's happening in near real time. And this is absolutely great, because think of in the next 5-10 years, the cities will get smarter. You will have the traffic regulation. What is the impact of changing the speed? What is the impact of using solar panels? All the new technologies that are coming in start to be connected as well. So we start to understand much better what's happening and how to have an impact, the biggest impact, and if it works. And so, yeah, that's really things are we're still at the beginning of this space, but things will change a lot, and for the better.
Mm-hmm. I'm putting my engineer's hat on again, because I can't help it, I am one. And I just, as you were speaking as well, I just realized how wonderful it would be if this data was available, if a city perhaps leveraged EverImpact and then kind of released all that real-time carbon data or whatever data available to engineers, the kind of tools we'd build on top of that. One of the open data platforms, really good.
Yeah, exactly. You can think of a lot of use cases we see, for example, with cities, how this can help urban planning make scenarios for the cities and see in real time what is the impact on greenhouse gas emissions, right? We see also companies in the transport sector looking into making savings on fuel and being more efficient and see again what is the impact on the carbon footprint. And we're very pleased, because we're engaging into some collaborations where we want to track the entire supply chains. So what is the impact of using this mode of transport or this route on the total carbon footprint of your product that you buy in your supermarket or in retail chains, and make bring a decision to you as a consumer about what is the impact of my purchase, right? If I buy this product or this other one, I can see my carbon footprint calculated and very accurate based on what has it been shipped by sea, has it been sent by plane, and what is the impact on my on the carbon footprint. And we start to be entering into that level of details. Of course, there is still some work to be done in the next years, right? But this is the kind of collaboration we are getting into, and getting to a level of details that is about informing citizens and consumers about what they consume, informing businesses about how they produce, and of course they also want to appeal to the consumer with more information as well, and also help cities make cities a more livable space, because we know the cities will be more crowded, and having clean air is not going to be guaranteed. So there is a lot of things we need to do, and bringing this information is going to enable all these things to happen.
That's amazing. And I can really visualize and see it now in the future. Never really thought about it, to be honest with you, that how data is actually one of the cruxes of our problems, and better access and more accurate data and more real-time data is going to be essential to everything, to building anything and to solving anything. Yeah,
you're absolutely right, Asim. And I can't remember who said that, but we hear a lot that data is the new oil. And perhaps for the better that data is going to replace oil. of course, it's also going to create a bit of a carbon footprint as well. But it is becoming very important for decision making and finding solutions. But we also are very conscious that it's an enabler. Data is not everything, and that we also need to be not all about technology. So it's also about, at the end of the day, people, changing habits and having things to happen in the design of how we do things. But having data is going to help that.
Yeah, I can imagine if my city had real-time information about carbon emissions and we wanted to voluntarily change habits, if I saw the impacts of that, maybe my impact wouldn't be visible on its own, but maybe 3% of the city did the same thing. That'd be quite motivating and kind of can help kind of push that along. I know I get very motivated by apps that measure me, tell me what I'm doing. Yeah. So I can see that as well.
We actually had a project in four cities in Europe, in Manchester, Porto, Santander, and Herning in Europe. And what we looked at was the impact of recycling. So basically trying to link data from haulers, the trucks that collect the waste, how much was recycled, and try to make the first links with CO2 emissions at the neighborhood level, and trying to inform citizens into showing them what's the impact of their recycling on the environment, and even trying to game a bit the neighborhoods against each other and say, this neighborhood is doing better, you know, at recycling and has a better impact on the environment. And then suddenly, this type of projects makes it much more palpable, concrete, real for citizens. They start to understand about CO2 emissions and the consequences of their actions, and the recycling is actually having an impact or not. And that's very interesting to have this type of motivation for citizens as well.
That's amazing. I'm from Manchester, actually. That's where I was born.
All right.
Were there any positive results from that? Has it run long enough to get to see behavior changes?
So we still did some pilot projects there. We had, imagine working with cities, it takes a long time to validate the technology. So we've done those projects, and we saw the first connections between the two types of information. And we know how to get to the next stage. And this is something we're working on. So that's coming in the future, hopefully.
I'm going to pit my sisters against each other. They still live in Manchester. that's amazing. So I think we've covered kind of the problem itself. I have a really good understanding of kind of the problem that there is and why it needs to be solved and the scale of it. Can we talk a little bit about EverImpact itself? Can you paint us a picture of what EverImpact is? Who would buy it? What would they specifically get out of it?
Yeah, so EverImpact is a sort of software platform, what we call IoT platform as well. That we deliver as a SaaS or a software as a service. So we basically, as a city or business, you can access the software online and get your carbon emissions dashboard. So you have to think of the Google Map with a layer of CO2 data on top. And from there, we can start to help you find reduction opportunities, connect you with potential solution providers, and also help you generate some revenues for your projects. So of course, we're still developing some of these features, but this is really the roadmap we have. And this is really our mission is really to make it easy for cities and businesses to measure their carbon emissions, identify reductions, and find financing. So really trying to remove the pain points for them.
I see. So the goal for it is to be both the product for identifying the carbon, but it almost sounds like a marketplace as well, or an economy, I should say, where you could find suppliers who are willing to put money in to reduce carbon emissions. And so from a city's perspective, it would almost be a cost-free product, it sounds like.
Yeah, so really what we are trying to do is to, so first we're selling the software, you know, through subscriptions to cities and businesses. But we really want to be more than just measuring. We really want to help them achieve their goals. And to do this, we're going to try to pair them with some solutions to do that. That could be having solar panels on houses, rooftops. That could be better mobility solutions, electric vehicles. There could be many different solutions. And in the future, we'll start to try to bring those solutions that are the most impactful. We're not there yet, but that's the vision we have. And we can also, after about 6 months to a year of using the platform, we can start generate revenues for companies and cities that start to reduce CO2. And which means that also in the future, we would really like to remove the cost of Ever Impact and become a partner and start to go at this in a win-win type of business model where we help generate revenues and all this, the cost of our technology to measure is actually included in that. And therefore, it becomes, we want to remove the barriers for cities and businesses to start measuring and reduce emissions.
So talk to me, like, let's focus on a city, perhaps. Like, who do you speak to? Is it the mayor of the city is the one that contacts Ever Impact? Do cities have, like, companies have corporate social responsibility departments? I know at Microsoft, we have, like, a CSR department and a sustainability organization. They would be the ones, dedicated team of people. They're actually the ones that calculate this stuff on a little bit more than spreadsheets, but they do all that stuff. Is there similar organizations and teams in cities that you speak to? Or are you speaking to just mayors that are... I want us to be green. Who do I speak to?
So typically, the setup is kind of the same. You talk to a sustainability team or sustainability manager, which is the typical persona in those organizations. Now, just like large corporations and cities, you have to talk to a lot of different stakeholders. That could be innovation teams as well. We see a lot more innovation units in either businesses or cities. You got to talk to technical people. You got to also involve city council, the political level, and the mayor as well.
Elected leadership.
Exactly. Yeah. And this is not easy as a startup to go to work with cities. So which is why we're not only working with cities, we also work with businesses, and we actually work with large businesses that works with cities as well, because we tend to bundle our solutions with theirs. So imagine you have a low carbon solutions that is being implemented in a city. We come as a package and address this. That's how we go to market. But you got to talk to many different stakeholders in order to be bringing this type of new systems in cities.
It sounds like if you are a low carbon solution provider, it's like saying, hey, city, buy my low carbon product. But also, here's Ever Impact, who will tell you how this is actually impacting your carbon because it might not show up on your spreadsheets. That sounds like a very win-win scenario there. That's quite good.
Yeah, absolutely. For everybody, because really for the low carbon solution provider, we can prove that their solution is actually having an impact with their clients, with the city, right? So if you have solar panels or other solutions, we can actually prove with numbers that what they're providing you is actually working well. And it usually does, right? Then the other aspect is that we also help improve the return on investment and make the technology, the low carbon solutions, more affordable. As a large provider, we can help improve their return on investment with the capital that with the revenue that we generate. And so yes, this is a win-win for everybody.
I imagine there is like a list of cities in the world. It's probably almost proportional, isn't it? That if the city has more... Actually, I don't know. Is there a list of cities that you would love to work with?
Yes, sure. So we have identified 10,000 cities that have actually committed to reduce carbon emissions by 40% by 2030. So in the next 10 years, they committed to 40% reductions.
Wow.
So there is a list of cities, and they actually are very proactive. They actually organize themselves as groups of cities. You've got some networks of cities such as the Global Covenant of Mayor, C40. So cities tend to actually work together and see what works in one city and try to replicate that. And try to replicate best practices among cities. So there is a lot happening, and cities and businesses as well are organizing themselves. We are now also starting to work in the transport sector with the whole industry. So we can see that the problem is so big that cities and businesses need to work together and group resources to achieve this agenda, the climate agenda, which is great because this is what we need.
Yeah, that definitely feels like this right way forward, rather than kind of command and control. You must do this, go and figure it out yourself, like in partnership with businesses. And 10,000 cities, that's quite a number.
It is.
And that's quite a, somebody's handed you a sales lead list and you just have to go, yeah, it's different to other businesses where you're trying to figure out who the hell wants your product. They've actually said, I want your product, or we need something like this.
Yeah, no, I wish it was that easy. I think it is a good start indeed.
Yeah.
No, it is great. We see a lot of changes this year, and this is great. And seeing this type of initiatives is fantastic. And we also actually seeing about 120 cities working with Google as well, which is one of our partner with whom we are working with, and there are plans to organize and structure this in an even better way, and this is just great to see. So there are some positive initiatives out there. And it's great. It's moving.
So you've seen, or you've experienced, a change in mood or attitude of cities around the world, like the same way that there's been kind of a groundswell of movement throughout the world. You've seen that reflected in cities also.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would say, so what we've seen is during the coronavirus, the COVID-19, we've seen a dramatic shift. We start to see people contacting us much more to try to solve this problem. I think it has really made people realize the importance of solving climate change. I think coronavirus was the first time people really felt what a huge crisis could be. Of course, we've seen other crises before, but I think people really realize the importance of doing something now. We must react, and we can see that we can't do business as usual in such context, and that we need to, if we want to make sure in the future we can function as we do now, we got to do something about that. And so we've really seen that. And that's actually the... before that, we have seen also with the climate march. So we've seen Greta Thunberg and other people going in the streets. And you mentioned Manchester. We knew there were some citizens also protesting in front of the city hall about climate. And we've really seen that citizens started the movement with activists, and now the overall population starts to be much more aware of their climate and their carbon footprint. Now we start to see businesses thinking about this and being more proactive, cities. So yeah, we've really seen something happening. There is a shift.
Amazing. That's good to hear. I've heard rumors of this from various news articles and snippets. It's great to hear that confirmed from you also. That's fantastic. So talk to me about EverImpact itself. Like, when was it founded? What stage are you at as a startup?
Yeah, so it was funded at the beginning of 2016, officially as a startup. We actually started with as a public-private partnership, an idea from the NASA Jet Propulsion Laboratory.
Oh, wow.
So that was kind of encounter with two engineers from the NASA Jet Propulsion Laboratory launching the first carbon emission satellite that got us the idea. They were searching for the ground infrastructure. And from there, we started working on the idea and could see that it would progress as a startup faster. And we went into creating Ever Impact. So we had the idea in end of 2014 and started officially as a startup in 2016. And from there, we got to work with 8 cities in Europe with the European Commission into an accelerator. So the European Commission actually did a great job because they funded 1,000 startups all over Europe.
Wow.
And we were in the pool of their top 15 because they could see that was a promising challenge. Well, that was a big challenge and a promising solution. And then after that, we got into the Google for Startups Accelerator for about 2 months ago. I think they are kind of seeing similar things that you do in different corporations as well, such as Microsoft or Amazon and so on. And this is really a great boost for us because we are now moving from being 4 employees to recruit 4 more at the moment. So things are moving. We are getting into a joint venture with a whole industry in the transport sector. So things are really moving this year for us. And so far we've been bootstrapped, but we are now planning to do a first fundraise at the end of the Google Accelerator in Q4 2020. And then we are getting great support from Google on this, helping us find investors and so on. So so we also getting into the first revenue. So things are really moving. So it took us some years to get off the starting block, but now we are accelerating and it's very very nice.
It's amazing to just want to spend the moment to congratulate you on bootstrapping, because bootstrapping is extremely hard. Bootstrapping and making it through the starting years, and to now you're getting, you're in the accelerator and about to get funding. So congratulations on that.
Thanks.
So that's how you start, and that's where you are right now. Like, talk to me about, how does this scale? Like, how do you get to those 10,000 cities? Who do you need to speak to? Who are your partners? What needs to happen in the world and at Ever Impact?
Yeah, so how does it scale? We have indeed identified those 10,000 cities, but we also have identified a first group of 16,000 plus companies that will also need to reduce carbon emissions. So we have identified clearly how to scale, and it's really to find partners that can access those cities and companies and their clients. And we are now, we are establishing some collaborations with such partners and really trying to bundle our solution with any low carbon solutions. Any solution that reduces carbon emissions, we are basically trying to collaborate with them and bundle our solution to try to boost their solution. So again, we really want to be the enabler, enabling them. So we have identified how to scale. We have a clear path. And now we are basically working on establishing the partnerships to deliver on that, and which is also happening at the moment. So now it is, and this is why we want to raise money, is to also scale our outreach to partners and multiply the existing collaborations we have to get to a faster adoption. Because the goals are so ambitious for 2030, there's only 10 years left to deliver on those on this agenda. And so that means we need to get to those 10,000 cities and companies much faster in the coming years. So this is very important.
That makes a lot of sense, partnering. So your scaling strategy is, there's an audience out there, there's a set of customers, you know who they are. It's just attaching to existing organizations with their own sales functions, really want to take advantage of, right? And rocket shipping into there. Yeah, okay, that makes a lot of sense. So talk to me about the next 18 months then. That's kind of like far in the future, like what you've got planning in the shorter term.
Yeah, so next 18 months, so we are working on fundraising in the next 6 months, which will allow us to grow the team, moving from 8 people to about 13 people, hopefully. after that, in the next 18 months. We also working on a joint venture with a large player in an industry in transport. We can't say much more, but we're working on this as well, which also should bring us scale. And it's a whole new market we had not seen, and so this is a whole new market opening up in front of us. So this is going to also keep us busy as well, and then trying to scale what we've done so far in the collaborations we've had, and also another thing we look at is the impact we can have in the next 2 years, in the next 18 to 24 months. We want to start measuring 500,000 tons of CO2 over the next 2 years. We want to identify 150,000 tons of CO2 in the next 2 years. We want to try to generate about $3 million in revenues for projects we're going to work with. So we really have defined clearly the next 18 to 24 months, and working with Google on this has been very good for us to structure all this and put some objectives clearly defined and what we have to achieve. So this is what we have to go in, what we're going to work on in the next 18 months.
Google is well known for OKRs, and you're a data firm, so having a set of OKRs it makes a lot of sense. And it makes sense, actually. I didn't realize until you said it. It makes complete sense that you're one of the things you're measuring yourself on is carbon tracked. Complete sense, because that's what you're...
Yeah.
Yeah.
You got to preach what you teach,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So absolutely. And we want to... So again, we're called Ever Impact, right? So we want to help others transit... we want to help others get to a low carbon economy, but we also want to be profitable, because if we are not, we are not going to be able to do that. So we need to have the business models that works to achieve those climate goals, but we also want to have impact. And so some of our investors we're speaking with are also looking at this, and Google is also forcing us a lot to look at that. This is actually great, because we also have to track ourselves and track the impact we're going to have.
Yeah, excellent. So let me, if you don't mind, move to you personally,
mm-hmm.
talk a little bit about your past and what specifically inspired you to found Ever Impact.
Right. So I've worked for about 20 years in international development and sustainability. Before it was even more successful in the new black, I would say, or cool. So 20 years in that and using tech for good. So I was working for organizations like the UN, EU, Gates Foundation, USAID, in tech for good. And in particular, I was working on deploying IT systems for presidential elections in developing countries.
Wow.
So going into countries after war or a crisis and trying to help the country build databases about their population and try to go to elections, and this quite fast. So I could really see how technology could help countries develop themselves and recover from crisis.
And data, it sounds like, as well.
And data, absolutely. I could see the importance of data. And so when I left my comfortable job, wanted to be an entrepreneur, and I was fiddling with some ideas, and actually serendipity led me to meet those two engineers in the middle of nowhere in Denmark, and presenting this satellite that had just been launched, monitoring carbon emissions. And so I knew from my past working in the UN that this would be the next big topic in the UN in the next 10, 15 years. So that really inspired me to start Ever Impact. What was this meeting with NASA, and to see that actually what was possible. And I thought, well, this is great, but we need to bring this to the UN, because that's exactly what the UN does, right? Solving those big challenges, such as climate change. And so I went to two inspiring people that really also inspired me to make Ever Impact what it is now. The first one is Jan Mattsson, who was the executive director of a UN agency called UNOPS, which is a $1.2 billion in volume agency. And so he was the executive director and really did a tremendous job there. He was working directly for Ban Ki-moon and Kofi Annan in his career. And so I went to pitch him the idea, and that's how we started working on Ever Impact. And he started to plug me into other people and experts to build a team of experts to go and crack this climate problem. And that's how he got me in touch with Anna Retia, which is our CTO now and co-founder, who had launched the two first satellite agencies in the UN, making an innovative use of satellite imagery, and started an agency called UNOSAT based in Geneva that is still existing, using satellite imagery to solve problems after a natural disaster, for example, to get data to see the depths of the damages and in order to deploy the blue helmets, the operations of the UN. Then he created the first climate satellite agency in the UN, using satellite imagery already back in the 90s. And so these two guys were very high up in the food chain in the UN, had accomplished so much. And it's the kind of people I kind of look up to. I'm so lucky now that I actually work with them every day. And Jan is our chairman now, and Anna, our CTO and co-founder. And so really this combination of meeting this technology from NASA and those two guys, how they could, leverage technology to solve some big challenges was really what inspired me all the way.
Wow, that's quite inspiring to me as well, actually. It's quite a career doing some amazing stuff. So,
yeah, I think the first year or two I was working with them, I really had to pinch myself sometimes, thinking like, am I really working with these guys? Yeah. But that was great.
That's amazing.
Still is.
That's great.
Still is.
So I'd like to move on to a question. It's one of my favorite questions, actually. And is, you've been doing this now since, you've been doing this for a very long time. You've been doing Ever Impact since 2016.
Mm-hmm.
Humanitarian and kind of for good enterprise work for quite a while. It's tough. It's tough on so many levels. How do you stay motivated when things aren't going so well for you?
I think like most entrepreneurs, really, it's passion. So that's really at the core of my system, I would say, my values. I would not have done any other startup. I really did something that I burned for, which is what I've done in my career before. And this is really what makes you not fret and stay focused when things get tough, because they do. Entrepreneurship is hard. So when you love, really, you don't count the hours and the money you lose or leave on the table if you were in a high paying job. But it's really what keeps you motivated in the dark times. And from there, it is important also. I always remember so this passion, but also the mission. You got to be committed to something. Because I also see it's easy to go in many different directions. And sometimes at the beginning of the adventure, you would meet people even asking, why do we even need to measure, right? Well, we just want to reduce. And so you face a lot of challenge. And in those moments, also as a company, you want to make sure you stay focused on your mission. And so that's also an important part. Not to fret as a person and as a company. And then I think another key thing is the vision, is to have a roadmap, a unique solution so people want to follow you. And it was important for us to also have this vision for employees to join us, to attract great people to work with us, to convince large companies, cities to work with us and give us a shot. Even though this was a new tech and we did not have 5 years of experience at that time. So the passion, the mission and the vision is really what keeps me going, because every time it gets hard, That's where you get your energy, right? That's where you go and recharge the batteries and remember why you did this and why it's going to work. And I remember at some point things were very, very tough because you ran low on money sometimes and you offered some jobs and you don't take holidays and all these things. You know how it is. You grind a lot. But I remember at the time saying to myself, right, if you want this to work, it's not about the result. It's really about the process, about what you want to do. And if you think that you're going to do this anyhow, whatever happens, then what happens to you doesn't matter anymore. And you become kind of immune to what happens, good or bad, especially at some point, it's a lot of bad when you create a company. Until the day you hit the first success, and then one small success to everybody is actually tremendous to you. It seems like you've conquered the world sometimes. and then you start multiplying those small successes and to start understanding the ball game and become more of a professional entrepreneur. So yeah, that was my answer to how I stay motivated.
No, that's brilliant. I think that's an amazing answer. And I can see you have a purpose and that kind of drives you forward. And I think a lot of us in this space, I feel that once you're activated in the sustainability, in the green, in the humanitarian, in the good space, that also gives you energy. And it gives me energy even listening to you talk about how you stay motivated. So yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've seen, you know, from my career in the UN in humanitarian field that you see a lot of people driven by passion and their purpose. And you see a lot of people willing to sacrifice a lot to have a high resistance and resilience to pain, which I found again as an entrepreneur. That's the same kind of traits you find in people. And that's the character you see. So this is really funny enough the kind of people we attract. So the founders, we all come from the UN and we have the same kind of value system and purpose. And for us, it's all about the passion. So we have fun together, but we have the same passion. And when you have this, then you have a good time because you're with like-minded people. And so all the people that are joining us in the adventure of Ever Impact, we are seeing amazing people coming to us that have done also a lot of great things. But at the end of the day, we all revolve around this passion for having an impact on climate and conveying this passion to do something, to bring solutions to life and do good with tech. And so that works in different worlds, actually. Mm-hmm. In entrepreneurship and in humanitarian, for example, to name a few.
Amazing. So just the last question, Mattia. So is there anything inspirational, something you've read recently, a person a listener should follow, a thought you've had that you just want to leave the audience with?
Yeah. This is, there is a quote from the UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon when he was once at Stanford, and he said, "There is no planet B." And I think it got picked up and became quite of a motto. And this is what is the first message I'd like to leave the audience with is that there's no planet B, there's no alternative. So we got to do something. And we might as well join forces and do something about it. And I would also like to quote, I think Kennedy said, ask yourself what you can do for your country and not what the country can do for you. And that's really what I also want to leave the audience, this message that think of what you can do. And even at a small scale, it can be small stuff, but just a few minutes or hours a day can do a lot. If you apply this consistently over a period of time, you end up maybe creating a startup, but that could be doing a lot of other things. We see people in companies dedicated a bit of their time for us. We see, for example, in Google, you know, some people dedicate a day a week on helping us. We see people outside of the corporate world so that want to help, and this is really great to see. And so I want to also encourage people not to see the climate challenge negatively, because we've done that and we're past that point, and now we need to focus on finding the solutions and bringing those solutions. And this to bring those solutions requires a lot of positivity and the right spirit to do that. So try to have this approach. What can you do for others? Even if it's a little, just a little is a lot. So that's the kind of message I'd like to leave the audience with.
Awesome. An amazing, inspiring message. Thank you so much, Matthias. Thank you so much for being on the podcast. Thank you so much for sharing your time with us. And thank you so much for everything that you're doing at Ever Impact. Thanks.
Thanks, Asim, for this great podcast. Really appreciate having you around now. You're part of the space.
Awesome. Bye-bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to Asim Hussain on The Climate Fix. If you like what you heard, please hit subscribe on your favorite podcast application. It really does help. Information about this episode, including all the links that we mentioned, can be found on our website, theclimatefix.com. If you want to message me, you can find me on Twitter as Jawache, or you can email me at hello@theclimatefix.com. If you want each new episode neatly packaged together with the show notes and sent to your inbox weekly, then subscribe to our newsletter, which you can again find on theclimatefix.com. Till next time.